This episode of Phantom Island is presented by our longtime friends at Homefield Apparel. Homefield is constantly innovating and adding new items to their voluminous collection of high-quality, incredibly comfortable sports apparel. And, much like this podcast, Homefield is not just about college football. Go to homefieldapparel.com, search golf, and you will be rewarded with golf-specific designs for schools from Iowa State to Wake Forest to Oklahoma to Yale to Youngstown State. Steven and I are thrilled that Homefield is helping us launch this new show. And without any further ado, let's begin. Steven Godfrey, you defy the stereotype of the white Southern dad because you did not, to my understanding, watch any of this year's Masters tournament.
I like how you've decided to dox this well-manicured persona that I've kept for years to do stuff like ingratiate myself to coaches and agents and like... You're just gonna out me.
Do you want to lie? Yes. Steven watched all four rounds of the Masters.
Look, you joke, but I spent an inordinate amount of time the 2 weeks after the Masters tiptoeing through a conversation in which I act like I witnessed what happened.
I see. Okay.
The last time I watched the Masters live, I was in an airport and Tiger came back.
Okay.
Post Perkins sex having.
Uh-huh.
As you're about to hear throughout this episode, my golf knowledge is
lapsed.
Shockingly low.
Okay, that's fine.
I tell you what, just to lighten this up at the end, I will tell you my Masters story because I do have a thing with Augusta.
Okay.
I have never... Do you golf?
I have.
See, this is the one sport where it's like, no, you don't talk about like all the years we've done football stuff. I haven't been like, Ryan, do you tackle?
How often are you out there running passing drills, Ryan?
What do you feel like your deficiency is in zone coverage?
Sure.
No, I have never swung a golf club.
Okay.
Once a year, I like to get in a solid 18 holes at the UFO Putt Shack at Pensacola Beach, in which a successful round to me is 1 5-year-old not beating a 7-year-old to death with the putter.
No clubs thrown would be a
correct.
Good round.
That is the extent of my golfing.
All right. So because you didn't watch the Masters, I got to tell you about a thing that really stuck out that really didn't have anything to do with the golf being played. Bryson DeChambeau, who was in the final group with eventual champion Rory McIlroy, was wearing, I believe for the entire tournament, his LIV team gear, which somebody on Blue Sky asked me, why is he wearing the gear of a minor league baseball team? And that's not inaccurate.
You came in and said, you describe the situation, and like, I know what Augusta is. I'm from Georgia. I understand the Masters. Look, dude, I'm from Georgia. I went to Ole Miss. We live in the South. Like, I understand Augusta and pimento cheese and all that nonsense.
Yeah.
But you came in saying like minor league baseball team was the phrase you used. I would go maybe more like chief marketing officer for like the Bush, like a Bush Series NASCAR team.
Okay. That's just a different
same thing. Same energy. Yes, totally. Yeah, yes. Yeah.
The reason this was interesting to me is because it was very much, and Bryson was not the only LIV golfer who did this, it was very much a way to bring LIV's presence to one of golf's, certainly American golf's, like most traditional settings.
Very.
And I wanted to use that as a jumping off point, not about fashion at the Masters. Maybe that's a future episode we'll do.
Mm-hmm.
But it sort of made me wonder. The LIV experiment has been going on for coming up on 3 years now. And the question that popped into my head that I want to untangle with you today is pretty simple.
Okay.
Has LIV succeeded?
Okay.
To get there, I think we have to start with a little bit of history. Can you walk our listeners through what the PIF, the Saudi Arabian Public Investment Fund, is and what it does?
I just want to start by saying, while you were saying that, I tried to figure out what LIV stood for. And when I found the answer, I became even more frustrated.
Okay.
Tell
the listener. Let's not assume everyone listening knows.
Well, the entire time I've heard about LIV these years now, I've assumed it was just a standard acronym for something
that had L and I and V in longer word form.
And it is LIV, which refers to the Roman numerals for, that's the Roman numeral for 54, which right. is the number of holes.
Correct. They don't play 72 hole tournaments. They play 54 hole tournaments, thus LIV.
I can only imagine the backslapping in that marketing meeting. Okay. The more important conversation here is actually not about LIV. It's about PIF. Mm-hmm. Which is PIF, which is the Public Investment Fund. If you don't know, the Public Investment Fund is the sovereign wealth fund of Saudi Arabia. It is maybe or among the largest. We're gonna couch a lot of this yes. reporting here and try yeah. and keep it generic. But it is a big hunk of money on behalf of Saudi Arabia, hence Public Investment Fund, okay? I went on a deep dive, which just basically means Wikipedia. So the estimated assets are $930 billion US.
Right.
Okay. It was created in 1971. And basically it was, hey, we're Saudi Arabia. We got a lot of money. We're going to invest it. Okay. That's the shortest probably introduction you need on the PIF.
Yes.
Okay. There's a big old hunk of money from the Saudis. And then they want to spread that money around into things that maybe you would consider as an American not to be associated with the culture or the geography or anything to do with Saudi Arabia.
Yes. And okay? and some of it is just like partial investments in things. Like they yeah. have holdings in Uber and Disney and Bank of America and Heathrow Airport, which is not one I knew.
Huh, okay. Does that mean I can complain to them about Heathrow?
Or? I wouldn't recommend it.
Okay. The other abbreviation, if you will, or I guess it's not an abbreviation, but the other sort of slang term that you should be familiar with for this episode is something called Vision 2030, which sounds like an awesome syndicated sci-fi show in like the late 80s, early 90s.
Sure.
But Vision 2030 is an initiative, I guess you could say. It is defined as a broad term that includes several sub-initiatives. But it is the Saudi Vision 2030 on behalf of Saudi Arabia to diversify and sort of change both its revenue sources, its investments, its reputation.
Its cultural cachet.
Yes.
Yeah.
So along those lines, Vision 2030 is basically a sort of like, we're going to pay our way into being perceived differently.
Right.
In addition to, we're going to start maybe like putting money into things that could come in that are not oil related. The short report back on this, since Vision 2030 was started, which was announced in around 2016, there was this idea that they could just sort of throw money into different industries and start to diversify their revenue. That hasn't really happened. The revenue of Saudi Arabia is still the revenue of Saudi Arabia, which is a lot of oil. So what we're going to talk about today is sort of akin to a vanity project. Is that fair?
I think we're trying to suss out whether it's a vanity project or not in some ways. Yeah, sure.
Okay. All right.
The other reason we're bringing up the PIF, I mean, spoiler, the PIF runs LIV. It's not the only sports holding that they have. They own, I believe, 85% of Newcastle United. That acquisition was rather acrimonious, but has ended with kind of a English soccer throwing its hands up and saying, it's fine. Let's all just move on.
Yes.
The LIV experiment, and I think it's fair to call it an experiment since it's still somewhat new, is a little different in a few regards. Some of those regards are structural, and we're not going to get too much into them. There are very good golf podcasts you can listen to, No Laying Up, The Shotgun Start, that will walk you through like what LIV does that is different. As Stephen mentioned, this is a tournament that plays 54 holes. They don't have a cut. The part of a golf tournament where the golfers who aren't golfing very well don't get to continue in the tournament.
Mm-hmm.
There's a whole team element that we have alluded to through Bryson DeChambeau's outfit that is a big part of it. And there are some presentational aspects they do in the broadcast and how the tournaments are organized that are trying to sort of push golf forward as a thing. To the side of that, but not very far to the side, is the concept of sports washing.
Mm-hmm.
You said vanity project, and I think there is something to it, but it is not vanity for vanity's sake. What LIV has been accused of from the very beginning is being sort of a reputation money laundering machine for the Saudi government. Stephen, why does the Saudi government need a reputation money laundering?
They don't do great when you talk about these little nitpicky things called human rights.
Yes.
We're being cute and glib, but that's probably the best way to address what is a very serious situation. So Vision 2030 and the current direction of the PIF fall under Mohammed bin Salman Al Saud. So he's commonly referred to as MBS, and that's how we will refer to them, so I don't poorly pronounce this man's name. This sounds great on paper, uh-huh. Vision 2030, because it's like, hey, we want to show the world that we embrace a diversity of culture. We embrace a diversity of thought. We want to bring in new ideas. Obviously, by the way, they're investing into a lot of Western sports, Western entertainment
video
properties.
Games,
right.
Yeah.
We talked about Nintendo earlier.
Yeah.
I think there's other show business elements here where the public investment fund. But when I say show business, I'm just talking about Western culture.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. So you would think, oh, okay, cool. This MBS guy, like he's wanting to sort of bring this culture forward. Not exactly.
Sure.
The thing that I go back to, the thing that I focus on, the thing that a lot of Western media has focused on for reasons that are about to be abundantly clear, is that we know for sure, at least according to our government in the United States, that MBS had an American reporter, a columnist for the Washington Post, and this is the point where I'll say I also write a column for the Washington Post, killed, beheaded, Jamal Khashoggi, who was I don't know if you characterize him as a dissident necessarily, but
Saudi Arabia certainly would.
Yes. He kind of grew up basically avowed that like he grew up in a very sort of conservative Islamist way, and he had a long-term relationship writing about and covering Osama bin Laden. We'll get to the 9/11 part of this. But Khashoggi over time, I think, sort of westernized from the Saudi Arabian standpoint and was very, very critical of everything from human rights abuses to the way women were treated to just a plethora of issues that criticized the crown in Saudi Arabia. And he was essentially murdered by agents acting on behalf of MBS for his criticism of Saudi initiatives, of Saudi politics. This happened after Vision 2030 was announced. I want to be clear. So Khashoggi was killed in 2018. Vision 2030 was announced in 2016. So you're starting to see, if we just isolate and get really, really simple here, this is just one, and you know, again, my personal bias, probably the most glaring case of an insane level of hypocrisy here. And it's why when money from the PIF comes rushing towards American institutions, granted I'm not a golf fan, my first reaction to get back to the golf of this,
uh-huh,
was that when LIV was announced and funded and everything started happening, was, well, that's pretty easy for me to wipe my hands off.
To stay away from
it. I'm absolutely not interested in that whatsoever, because we are now sports washing, which just basically means it's not like golf is going to make the actions of MBS any different. The goal of sports washing is basically to take the money of a bad actor and distract you with it.
Yes. It should be noted that when LIV really started ramping up in like May 2022 is the time frame we're looking at, Greg Norman, very well-known golfer who was the CEO of LIV until relatively recently, got asked about sports washing and Saudi Arabia's human rights record, et cetera, and was asked somewhat about the death of Jamal Khashoggi. Here are his words. In part, it has been spoken about from what I've read, going on what you guys reported. Take ownership no matter what it is. Look, we've all made mistakes, and you just want to learn from those mistakes and how you can correct them going forward. It feels more like how you would talk about having a bad day with your putter.
Yes.
Than the murder of a journalist.
Yes. So Jamal Khashoggi was murdered specifically and beheaded by agents of the government at the behest of the Crown Prince. I just want to repeat that again. This was not a disagreement.
Right.
Nor was this sort of some heated argument in public that, mm-hmm, ended up inadvertently creating a manslaughter charge. This was a premeditated murder of a Western-based journalist who was speaking publicly in criticism of the Crown.
Right. So, all right, that's the tough stuff that we have to deal with in the background here.
Yeah, I can't believe I'm about to say this, but get me back to Bryson.
So I want to now take that as the background and say, okay, when Liv came along in 2021, really mostly 2022, what were the goals of this league? What was it trying to do? And 3 years out, let's talk about like what has worked and what has not. Okay. Some of those questions get back to sports washing, but some of them are like, I am interested just in the question of, has this worked as an entertainment product? Has it worked as a golf product? And I kind of want to walk through those and you can sort of pick at them with me if that's okay.
There is one part of this that when you told me before we recorded this, I was like, they do what? And it involves the clothes. But
okay.
Yeah.
Okay. Let's start with the golfers themselves. So at the time, I think the biggest, and maybe to date, the biggest win that Liv has accomplished is it has swiped some of the biggest names from the PGA Tour. Like, it is a startup competitor, at least at the start, that has successfully sort of taken talent away, which is the hardest thing, I think, for any. You look at sort of the history of, like, the NFL and the AFL, the NBA and the ABA. Like, mm-hmm. This is where it really – this is sort of like the make-or-break thing is, can you get talent to come to your league and bow out from the other league?
Yeah. The only thing I could think of that is not professional wrestling, and I say that seriously, yes, as someone who worked in that industry, is maybe the USFL.
Sure. Yeah. The USFL had a history of this as well. Yeah. Like was certainly trying to with Herschel Walker and stuff like that. But at first, if you're just going off of the final 2021 OWGR rankings, and we're going to get back to that acronym in a minute here. 10 of the top 25 golfers, including 4 of the top 10 at the time, ended up leaving the PGA to go play on the LIV Tour.
Okay.
That feels big to me. Like, all right, to use a top 25 we're more familiar with. If a college football super league, let's say funded by the PIF, started up, and 10 teams from this year's top 25, including 4 top 10 teams, left college football as we know it to go play in the Super League, that would be a big deal. That would be a big accomplishment for that rival league.
And the big deal here, when you present it in those terms, is to me, they would go play only against each other, right?
Correct, yes. The PGA was very clear that anybody who went to play for LIV, and this is still the case, you can't play for LIV and play on the PGA Tour.
Okay.
There are some events, the majors are the best example of this, where the two groups commingle, but you don't get to have your cake and eat it too.
So I did this. Let me see if I can do it again off the top of my head. There are 4 majors in golf, Augusta, the Masters,
yeah,
the British and US Open,
yeah,
and is it the Players?
It's called PGA Championship.
I always call it the Players Championship.
Yeah.
Okay,
yeah,
whatever.
Yeah.
All right. Those are the 4 kind of tent poles.
Yes.
All right.
Those are the.
Just to make people mad listening to this, those are their 4 Daytonas.
Sure.
Okay.
Sure.
If you're a LIV golfer,
yeah,
were you initially banned from like Augusta?
In the very early stages, that was sort of like a big open question as to whether the majors would allow you to come play.
Because there's all like, there's a golf tournament every weekend.
Yeah, the PGA has, yes, the PGA calendar is long and full, yeah, and has things going on almost.
Because yeah, like, yes. I mean, there's a Golf Network.
Yes,
this is not correct. By the way, this is not a bit. This is where I'm at in terms of my knowledge.
Mm-hmm.
And so really what we're talking about is bifurcating talent on a random Saturday.
On most Saturdays.
You know, yeah,
yes,
yeah, yeah.
Yes.
But the big tournaments were still sort of, and still are, the big tournaments.
Correct. Yes.
Okay.
That's the world we live in
now.
The
world's best are still playing golf against
each other. After much sort of hemming and hawing and public pressure about whether they should or shouldn't, where the majors have landed is, If you qualify, and we're not going to get into qualifying because we did that off air and there's too many things going on. And again, we'll come back to it with OWGR. If you qualify, you can play. So like one example is if you are a former Masters champion, as John Rahm, who is a LIV member, is, you can come back to the Masters. So John Rahm, LIV golfer, got to go play in the Masters this year. No questions asked. Totally fine.
How when LIV launches?
Yes.
they have 10 of these top ranked guys.
They have some lower name guys too, but yeah. Yes, they and not everybody we're talking about. It's sort of a domino thing. Like they get them in clusters. Mm-hmm. Dustin Johnson is the first big name that they get. Okay. They get him for I think about $150 million. John Rahm, who we just mentioned, they don't get him till December 2023. They get him for a $500 million deal. And that's where we should also talk about Jesus. The reason why golfers leave the PGA Tour to go take the LIV deal is there's a ton of upfront money involved. Like a ton. Greg Norman said that they offered Tiger Woods a high nine-digit figure that he turned down.
So if I'm a golfer.
Yeah.
On the PGA Tour.
Yeah.
And I'm known enough by sort of like the casual American viewer.
Yeah.
I'm making my money off of endorsements, but I don't have a contract with the PGA.
That's fair to say. You're not a salaried member same way you would be of other things. Golf works.
You know, like if I play for the Cincinnati Bengals, the Cincinnati Bengals write me a check.
Right. And it doesn't matter. Like, yes, there are sort of bonuses and incentives like that, but as long as you show up and play, if you play for a 15-win Bengals team or a 2-win Bengals team, your salary for the year is the same.
But you have to win tournaments in golf to make money.
Correct. And the money list in golf is this big thing because it's not just a reflection of who's making the most in golf. Because of what tournament golf traditionally is, it's a reflection of who's maybe played best over the course of the year. Just based on this is how much money you earned, so that maybe is a reflection of how consistent you were, how good you were at different venues, how often you were willing to play, et cetera, et cetera.
So this is pure meritocracy.
In theory, there are lots of people who would push back on that, and there are lots of critics of the PGA's calendar and where it puts its money that would push on the edges of that. But if we're just comparing PGA as it
But you got to win to eat.
What's that?
You got to win to eat in the PGA.
Yes. Largely speaking, that has been the case.
This is why so many Republicans I know love golf. Okay. All right. I got it.
So by offering this alternative.
Wait a minute. So these dirty socialist Saudis came in and said, we'll just pay you to play?
Yes.
Regardless of if you win.
Yes. Correct. Like there, you do get money for winning as well. But the real carrot here is. Huge pot of money you get just for joining this league and for signing a nobody really knows how long, but usually like a 3 or 4 year contract.
And then LIV creates a schedule. And
LIV has events all over the world. They play in Australia. Okay. They play in.
Can I ask a dumb question
States?
Here?
Yeah.
Does LIV get like blackballed from venues? So if I have like a fancy pants golf course somewhere that's not Augusta or whatever. What are they? They're always called like Whispering Rolling Hill Pines. All right. So if I'm at Whispering Hill Pines.
Yeah.
Which definitely sounds like a urinary tract like type of situation. Whispering Hill Pines gets approached by LIV. Does the PGA say, no, you can't do that? Or like, I guess I'm trying to ask is how easy is it for LIV to get on their feet? They're throwing crazy amount of money at talent. So you have a reason for the event. I'm jumping ahead here. I assume they get a TV deal.
Okay. So let's talk about the TV
deal.
I'm going to put the course thing to the side because I don't know a ton about it. I will say like they haven't had a problem finding courses.
That's what I'm asking. Yes. Yeah. And
like, are they necessarily like the best and biggest courses that you would ever dream of in your life? No. And there are a lot of Donald Trump's golf courses that they end up playing at, especially in the United States. But putting that aside, let's talk about the TV deal. That is one that I'm going to categorize. So we're going to say player acquisition, LIV win, at least for now.
Okay.
I'm going to put an asterisk next to that
yes,
as well.
Yes, they have got talent, yes.
Television deal has changed recently. LIV's original deal was with the CW, who you may know from ACC game.
There's a long and rich tradition of Stanford playing Wake Forest.
That's right. The LIV deal with CW was not great, to put it bluntly.
Okay.
It was a revenue sharing deal. It wasn't just a straight up we're paying for rights. CW's network sort of has a bunch. There are some CW affiliates that carry sports. There are some that don't. And so LIV found itself constantly sort of battling with CW over when it was going to get on the air or if it was going to get on the air.
Yeah.
And because LIV, PGA, you know, is an American circuit,
Okay.
LIV is a worldwide circuit, so they have events in Spain. They have events in Asia, as I said. They have events in Saudi Arabia, obviously. Of course. They have some American events as well.
Okay.
But a lot of these events on the CW were being tape delayed. And
well, LIV, yeah, they're playing in Australia.
Sure. But LIV wasn't thrilled about that, because if you were a fan, if you were somebody who wanted to see some of these like very accomplished golfers,
yeah,
you didn't have a way to watch it live. You could only watch it on tape delay.
So they want you watching it 2 a.m. on the CW.
In theory, yes.
This got depressing.
In theory, yes. As of January of this year, LIV has a broadcast deal with Fox Sports. Okay. Instead, it's a much better deal for them, it seems. It's a rights deal. Nobody said exactly what that number is. Fox has guaranteed them a certain number of tournaments that will air on like Fox Prime and Fox Sports 1. Like they're only going to be relegated to Fox Sports 2 and Fox Business so many times. They're going to have like more, they'll have more stability when it comes to.
I have a real question again.
Yeah, sure.
Does Gus Johnson call golf?
No, Gus Johnson doesn't call golf. And okay. And if I mean, one of the other sort of like acquisitions LIV made was David Faraday, one of golf's most interesting voices, I guess you could say,
yeah.
Did sign up to be one of the prime voices. Of
David LIV Faraday, Thomas. Yes. Yeah. Half the shirts that are on sale at Dillard's.
That's right.
Okay. All right. Yeah.
I'm learning. So this, the Fox deal is relatively new. Seemed very interesting. It's a win in that LIV got this deal done in the first place. It is a loss based on a sample size of one so far. The weekend before the Masters, when LIV had a tournament in Miami going up against a PGA event in Houston. And this was sort of the big test of like, okay, you're both on broadcast.
So LIV was on Fox?
LIV was on Fox.
Fox Big Boy?
LIV was on Fox.
Okay.
PGA event was on NBC.
NBC proper.
Correct.
No cable network shenanigans.
Correct. No.
Just straight up old school four channels.
Yes.
Okay.
Correct.
All right.
LIV event has all their big names there. And a bunch of those big names are in the hunt on the final day of the tournament.
And
the, Bryson is one of them.
And these are names that you are also going to see the following week in Augusta.
Yes. Okay. Yes. Okay. 100%. The PGA tournament, much lower on the sort of like Q rating in terms of the golfers involved.
Okay.
The PGA tournament still ends up getting about four times the audience that the LIV event does. Now, the LIV event is the best broadcast they've ever done. It's a little under 500,000 people, but they're still trailing badly this PGA event that you would think was maybe set up to be like, oh, this is where you can sort of prove that fans will flock to you instead of the competitor. It's the competitor is offering a weaker product or what have you.
So now I'm past the deficit of knowledge and I'm into actual active bias in what I'm about to say, but I need to disclose this because I'm trying to explore how this disparity in ratings occur.
Yeah.
All joking aside, the Masters, the Opens, I get why they occupy the mind share that they do in the sports calendar.
Yes.
We just came off of March Madness. We're going to watch the Masters. I understand those as tentpole events.
Mm-hmm.
I would rather endeavor to understand a serial killer on a personal level than someone who's just firing up a random golf tournament to watch passively on television.
Yes.
On an idle Saturday or Sunday. So with that being said,
yeah.
Why then if talent is equal to quality.
Yeah.
Are you tuning into a maybe I'm being presumptuous, a lesser talented golf event?
That's a good question. I'm going to answer speculatively because I don't have perfect information on this. I think if I had to guess, I think LIV has a brand problem where LIV has really good golfers, but the event is not necessarily the best test of what they're doing. But I think to use an example that may feel more familiar to you, it may have an Alabama, but this is Alabama playing an FCS team in terms of the structure of the event, the field of the event, in some cases, the courses of the event. And so it's like, well, yeah, you have a lot of big name talent, but I don't feel like they're being put to the test in a way that is compelling. And if the PGA maybe right now is, who can I say this about and offend the least? Let's say the Big 12, where you're like, okay, you don't necessarily have the like the huge brand names that you used to, certainly in this event, but I still find the product very compelling. I still find it more competitively interesting.
One more dumb question. There's no variation in the format of the game between the two.
There is a lot of variation
in the format between the two. So we have a CFL situation
going on. So in terms of like hit ball, put ball in cup, yes, that's all true. But the fact that these are events that, first of all, LIV is 3/4 as long. It's 3 days. It's 54 holes of golf. A PGA event is 72 holes of golf.
Why so is it? Okay, why?
I think, and again, I'm speculating a little bit here. I think LIV's theory is that A, golfers find 4-day events super exhausting, and the first day of a PGA event is always on a Thursday in the middle of the day. So there's some logic to sort of like, well, who's going to attend / watch on television golf on a Thursday? Friday, Saturday, Sunday, you can get me there, but Thursday feels like hard to do.
Okay.
And I think it's also just meant to be like, hey, we're different and modern.
Okay. So they're doing kind of the dumb variation.
A little bit of it is that.
Minorly, yes. Like, yeah.
And within that, they're also not doing a cut. As I said earlier,
yeah.
the way golf traditionally works, you play 36 holes. After that, you pick a dividing line that sort of says like, okay, everybody whose score is equal or better to this can continue in the tournament. Everybody's score who's worse than this cannot. That matters because, as we went back to, that has a big outcome on whether or how much you get paid for a tournament.
Okay.
So if you make the cut, your chances of making more money from a tournament go way, way, way up. But in LIV, if you're just playing for a contract, what's the point of the cut anyway?
It's just a guaranteed contract.
Right.
Wow. Again, I find this funny because then you're going to get the entitled athlete who's just really not motivated.
Sure.
According to sports fan trope.
Yes, then. Yes. There is a lot of like psychoanalysis going on here. But I think there are some golf fans who would say it is interesting to watch somebody fight to finish top five in a tournament because they make more money and it may have like more impact on their ranking and this, right, that, and the other. Whereas LIV golfers don't have the same incentive structure built in.
You could just phone it in. It's a guaranteed deal.
In theory, yes. I don't think the LIV golfers would cop to that, but there is some concern that might be competitively less interesting.
You're in a league that doesn't have any sort of history, precedent, or attention because you just told me what the television ratings are.
Yeah, right.
You're still allowed to go, I assume, like, you know, really put your focus in and go balls out at Augusta or wherever. So yeah, why wouldn't you just sort of half-ass it? Like it's like a giant non-conference schedule again in college football.
So let's talk about the OWGR, which stands for the Official World Golf Ranking.
Mm.
And this is
I'm sure this is normal and clean and reputable, just like FIFA. I'm sure we have.
I don't think it's as bad as like the IOC or anything like that.
How much slave labor are we talking about?
I don't think there's a ton. I think it's mostly just math nerds doing math.
Mm. Worse.
I haven't looked it up though, so if there is slave labor, don't hold it against me personally.
Are we golfing in Qatar?
That's not really up to the OWGR.
Okay.
The OWGR is basically a body that looks at golf leagues
all over the world. Okay. So these are just like the people who run baseball. These are the people who run baseball.
Sure. Let's call it.
It's just nerds.
Yes.
Okay.
And what their job is to sort of say like, okay, there are golfers all over the world who play on different tournaments and are part of different golf associations. We try to come up with a ranking that accounts for the differences in competitive levels, golfers who move around, like some golfers play some PGA events, some golfers play some European events, like a way to sort of say like, how can we come with a holistic ranking that just sort of says like, how good of a golfer are you in the whole world?
So this is like if college football listened to Bill Connolly.
Yeah.
I wonder if Bill knows about this.
Oh, I'm sure Bill knows about this.
I think golf quants are going to that conference every year in Boston and being like, our sport's perfect. They listen to us.
So here's the thing. LIV doesn't count at all from OWGR's perspective. And that was a big fight early.
So is this I assume this is just a petty move.
There is certainly a feeling that it could be a petty move, but the tournament elements that we're talking about, that it's only 54 holes, that there's not a cut, there's no like amateur pathway into LIV. You kind of get offered a contract or you don't. The PGA has like a qualifying school where like you who's never swung a club, if you decided like, I want to try to go get my PGA card, there is a path for you to do it. You're not going to get there. I want to be very clear.
Yeah.
But you could.
Sounds incredibly boring. Yeah, yeah.
OWGR had this long fight with LIV, basically about like, should LIV events count for purposes of the world golf rankings? And the answer is that they don't. And LIV has completely abandoned, they've abandoned this fight altogether.
Okay, so let's round it up real fast. We have a television product that is, regardless of the top level A-list talent, inferior in terms of ratings.
Based on one event, yes.
Okay, we're burning money, but it doesn't matter because it's Saudi PIF money.
It's almost limitless.
Right, okay. We don't have any brand identity.
Or to the extent that there is it's a highly divisive brand identity, let's call it. Okay,
and we're not counting in the overall rankings.
Correct, which is not good for these players because if you want to get an invitation to the Masters, the Open Championship, etc., the World Golf Rankings is one of the clearest ways to do it. And if most of your calendar not only does it count for those purposes, but you're watching other golfers on other tours climb above you because they're playing eligible events. Like, that's actively bad for you.
Why doesn't Augusta and the Open and the British, why don't they just tell LIV to fuck off entirely? Because this doesn't sound like a system where you've got this current crop of these top 10 golfers who are LIV, right?
Right.
It sure doesn't sound like a system that could sustain talent development over time.
So that's a question I can't answer right now because we're only 3 years into it. And you're probably right.
Okay.
I think part of the reason why they don't tell them to fuck off right now is because they still have very talented golfers. And to go back to the win column briefly, even though LIV players are participating in what detractors would say is like not real golf and would say is like a babyfied form of competitive tournament golf.
Okay.
LIV golfers have not disappeared when they get to the majors. Bryson DeChambeau won the 2024 U.S. Open. Brooks Koepka won the 2023 PGA Championship. Like I said, Bryson was in the final group at the Masters this year. And usually at any of the majors, you will see a LIV name or two in the top five or 10. So even if the league itself is not compelling to the major tournaments, the top golfers still have the skill and ability to be highly competitive and occasionally win at these tournaments. And I think there is a fear, I'm projecting here, that if you are the US Open and you don't let some of the best golfers in the world participate, that people will say, was it not a valid championship, not a valid test, because this player who could have won this event wasn't even given an opportunity.
Okay. How can I get this conversation back to what you told me off air, which is that Bryson, and he's the muscular.
Yes. He's nicknamed the scientist.
So this is the YouTube MAGA guy. He's like a lot of jet ski energy.
Sure. Okay. Yeah.
To go back to Augusta for a second.
But not just jet ski energy. Like, I modified this jet ski energy.
Oh, wow. So. Like not Florida.
It runs on fireworks.
Not Florida, but like Daytona specifically. Sure. Okay. Sure. All right. He has team apparel he's wearing?
Yes.
So we have teams now.
Yes. So
I know this is a little bit of a side note, but LIV is creating a league of teams of golfers.
Yeah. LIV is.
Please tell me they're all playing golf at the same time on the same hole.
No.
That I would watch.
No, it
like
is not.
Like four guys trying to putt to the same place
no,
at once.
No, no. I will say that like team golf as a concept does have appeal within the golf world. The Ryder Cup is probably the best example. It gets a ton of attention. But these are places, and Olympic golf is very popular. The Olympics just added mixed team golf for the 2028 games.
You don't have to tell me about team golf again.
Right.
Ole Miss, 6 years.
Yeah, it's fair. What LIV does, to the best of my understanding, does not adhere to It's a weird blend of individual golf and team golf.
Look, I'm going to be honest. I just want you to read the names.
Okay.
All right.
So part of why I do think the team thing seems incredibly clunky, and stupid. Part of it is the names.
Clunky is such a diplomatic term.
I'm a diplomatic. I'm the diplomatic.
Clunky is not how you presented this to me. It was okay. Much more of like, look at this. Let's slow down. I can see a limb hanging out.
I'll just read some of the names. Bryson DeChambeau plays for the Crushers.
Crushers.
And he was in his Crusher gear.
Arena Football League. Okay. Keep going.
The Fireballs.
Indoor soccer from the 1980s.
Very good. Very good. The Range Goats. Minor league weekend promotion.
Competitive Minecraft.
Okay. The Cleeks. Cleeks.
That might be some sort of derogatory slang term. Feels very sexual.
Sure, sure, sure.
Not something you want in a browser history.
No. It just doesn't feel like the team.
There's more, right?
There's more, but I can't do all of them.
Can you do a couple more?
The Four Aces is one of them.
The Four Aces?
Yeah. It's all one word. The number four.
So a Northeast Ohio Bowling League.
I was going to say it sounds like.
That's some dudes who are like.
Boy band made up of old men.
Yeah, retired plumbers. Sure. Either way, we're like, we got silk jackets.
Yeah, yeah. It's like, they're not appealing, is the easiest way to put it. The Ironheads.
That's an AWA tag team.
The Majestics.
Isn't that actually a WNBA name?
No, this is...
Mystics.
That's the Mystics. And okay. Yeah, yeah. The Ripper. Smash
the Ripper singular.
Just these are
the
like
Ripper?
These are like.
So I am a member.
More,
I am part of the
think
Ripper.
More MLS. So this is like Ripper GC, Smash GC, Stinger GC,
Golf Club. I
yeah,
assume.
Yeah.
Stinger GC,
Torque GC,
Torque GC.
Yeah.
That's without a doubt
protein
sold
powders.
GNC. Yes. Okay. We've been together too long.
So yes, the team part of this doesn't seem like it's catching on.
So badly to be in the marketing meeting here just to watch. I want to watch them high five each other in between Crush and Red Bulls.
It's not the best.
Okay.
So you have the OWGR problem,
mm-hmm.
which is very real for a lot of these players.
Screw that. The Rippers are on.
The ratings are what they are. Maybe they'll improve with more exposure on Fox. Who's to say? And I will add to the losses that there are constant rumors that the players are unhappy. And the players have to address this regularly.
Okay, hang on.
Yes.
I don't understand where we're going now.
Okay.
Because if I'm involved in this.
Yeah.
And I'm not saying golfers are necessarily higher or lower IQ on the athlete spectrum. Mm-hmm. But surely if you yourself have not arrived at this point, some handler or accountant has at least clued
explain
you
it
in.
To you.
That you are in the middle of the successful side of a grift and you should shut up. You still get to play in the big golf events.
Mm-hmm.
You're wearing fake like 1993 Pro Line bullshit team. Like, I'm sure at some point it feels eye rolling and somewhat embarrassing. I'm sure some marketing execs like, hey, we want you to do a radio interview and promote the Ripper FCL, whatever.
Mm-hmm.
At Whispering Hill Pines. But why would you be, if you're guaranteed this level of money, where is the discontent?
The discontent seems to be that pro athletes don't like being irrelevant. I'll give you an example. When you have highly compensated NFL player on a bad team, a team that's not going to make the playoffs, a team that's not going to win very many games, very rarely does it just be like, you know what? He's making $80 million, so he's happy. These are the players who want to get traded, want like to be in the limelight in some way, shape, or form. Now imagine that those players aren't even playing in the NFL. They are making millions of dollars to play in an entirely different league where they aren't on television, where they aren't even like, at least if you are an NFL player on a bad team, there will be a contingent of NFL media that's like, hey, you know what? This team sucks, but this guy is great, and we should talk about him. If you play in live, I think you're worried that you're irrelevant.
You fucking signed up, bud. Like,
yes.
We're not – I'm
yes.
sorry. This is not a trade situation.
Yes. Yeah.
And this is not European soccer where your rights are sold,
yeah,
which is essentially a trade.
Sure.
By their terminology. You signed up.
You did.
And I'm sure, to go back to 2023 for a second, that these bros who did it saw commas and never asked any questions. So, because irrelevancy and everything else that you're talking about could have... This is not hard to like ask four or five questions in this meeting where you see a big stupid check and say, hey, about this. Other than, is that going to clear?
Yeah.
What are we doing?
So I think there are two things at work here. One, let's say three things. Number one, easy one. Money doesn't buy happiness. I think that's the easiest answer to your question. The more direct answer to your question is that, as I said, we're in year three of this. And for some of these players, they have been here pretty much from the jump. And I expect, I have no information on this, that the unhappy ones are, and Brooks Koepka has said this in a press conference, that like, LIV is not where they wanted it to be. That when they signed up for this, they were not just sold on money. They were, although there was a lot of money, I want to be very clear. They were sold on a vision that they would create a true competitor to the PGA, or as we'll get to shortly, that they would merge back with the PGA and
still take it over.
Yes, or something like whatever. That. And I think they have found themselves in the wasteland where now they are playing to minor league stadium audiences and not getting the television attention that they deserve, that they think they deserve.
If anyone listening has followed any aspect of sports business in any of the last 50 years, this is the least surprising outcome that I could think of.
From LIV's perspective, it's bad. Like, it's bad that roughly every 2 months, somebody comes out with a report, sometimes anonymous, sometimes not, that says, player X is unhappy. Player is eager for this contract to be over. Mm-hmm. In the case of John Rahm, there was an anonymous report that basically said, if he could give all of his Saudi money back, which was $500 million, and go back to the PGA, he would do that.
What are they doing to these guys?
I think
miserable could it be to play in front of a few less fans?
I think it really goes to what I will
how
call
how ugly
untimely.
Is the Ripper's gear you're being asked
I
to
think
wear. I'm serious.
I think it's athlete vanity. And I don't mean that in a negative way. I think if you are a professional athlete, it's important to you to play on the biggest stage, to push yourself in competition regularly. And I think there is some element, maybe, of players who feel like, man, being in the Mickey Mouse League feels pretty Mickey Mouse.
Has LIV poached anyone else recently?
John Rahm is the best example, and that's a year and a half ago at this point. It has slowed precipitously.
So in a year and a half, this Rahm guy is, because you named him as the guy who would give it all back.
That was the report.
So he's only been there for a year and a half.
He pushed back on that vigorously in public.
I bet he did.
Yes.
Okay. Wow. Mm-hmm. Congratulations, you found the least sympathetic story I maybe ever heard of. Okay, we have to answer the initial question, which is LIV a success?
Yeah.
I entered into this conversation thinking I would subvert you by saying it doesn't matter. Because here's why. The PIF and the state of what the Saudi government is trying to do.
The purpose of LIV.
Is not to generate a particular... number.
Right.
It's not about margins. It's
not
about
selling
ROI.
Television commercials.
Exactly. It's not about ROI. It's not about any, it's actually not really about an investment strategy. The diversification and the action is the success unto itself.
Right.
Now, we could explore that for a while, but if we hold that to be true, the controversy around the Saudis and LIV and the connection between something like 9/11, that hasn't gone away.
Right.
So it's not like over time they've forgotten. I would challenge you maybe that if you, Ryan, get a job with the Saudis directing this cash cannon, Newcastle seems like a way better, smarter thing to do because I, again, another biased admission here, as someone who doesn't know anything about golf, I sure do have to disclose a lot in this episode, am currently like, I might pick like a European soccer team to watch. And I watched the FA Cup because my kids have defaulted to Liverpool, and I don't know why.
Yeah.
I'm just an old, scared man from America. But they're like, we like Liverpool. And I'm watching Newcastle win the FA Cup, and I'm like, oh, well, that's a spirited bunch. And I like the idea that it's not in London. I like the idea that it's in this sort of like forgotten and kind of made fun of northern side of England. I'm an American southerner. You can tell the connection. oh, okay. I'm like, oh, man, black and white. Love that. Oh, it takes me 45, 50 minutes of this experience to go, oh, they're owned by the Saudis. Right. And in fact, I don't think most people who are just sort of feeling out a sports team or a league or something are going, hey, I need to see I need to see all the disclosure of all of the owners here. Right. I did that because I just got done reading this book called The Club, which is really about all the weird investment money that came in. So just kind of did it on a lark.
Yeah.
It's very possible that I could have just watched a couple Newcastle games and like, hey, I'm kind of into this before if I ever was like, oh shit, it's actually it's sports washing.
Yes.
Liv does not provide you the elegance or the option of not knowing. This thing came sort of stamped with the Saudi crest on it into American households, in my opinion.
Well, it's also, it can't, to use Newcastle as an example, even if you are a fan of another, even if you go through that and you're like, nope, Newcastle isn't for me, Newcastle remains an EPL team.
Yes.
And will play all the other EPL teams, including the ones you like.
Yeah.
So they have an entrenched quality that now the PIF is part of the EPL in a way that is almost intractable. Like, obviously things can change and ownership is a fluid thing in some broad sense, but the club isn't going to shut down and the club is going to continue to operate within the overall EPL environment.
But I think more importantly is this, even if the Saudis bought two or three more English soccer teams, that would not dissuade me from saying I'm not going to watch the Premiership.
Right.
Because it's just like, okay, look, if I said I can't watch this league because one asshole owns one team,
right,
I would not watch
it. It'd be hard to be an NFL fan, an NBA fan.
Yeah, before we got on the mics, I mean, if you have followed American consumer trends and the death of the small town, like Walmart owns the Broncos.
Right.
And you can feel a lot of ways about what Walmart did to American consumer economy. And if Amazon bought a team tomorrow, I'm sure a lot of people would feel particular ways about that. So it's easier that way if I'm the Saudis, honestly, to target an American baseball team, a basketball team, whatever.
Yeah.
Then it would be – it seems like the fatal error here. And the reason why I can't simply just subvert your premise is that Liv and the Saudis are inseparable. So I don't know if Liv could ever exist – and this is where I'm going to take you to the merger thing – without – not necessarily a bunch of like morally minded golf viewers remembering a poor Washington Post columnist who was killed. Sure, most Americans hate the media. That's not a concern for them. It's just that you can't separate the Saudi of this. And I think isn't the goal of the PIF to kind of do that?
So let's talk about the largest sort of unclear part of LIV at this point. The initial heat about you've started this rival golf league. It's funded by the PIF. Here are all our complaints against Saudi Arabia and their history. The PGA pushed that very hard in the early days and was sort of like, one reason we don't want golfers to leave the PGA to go to LIV is because we want to stand with, like literally stand with 9/11 families. Commissioner of the PGA goes on television and sort of makes this appeal and says, this is a big reason why we stand apart from them.
So this is where you tell me they held true to what they said and they didn't turn into hypocrites within 2 years.
They made it about a year.
God damn it.
Before LIV Golf, the PGA Tour, and the PGA European Tour announced basically out of nowhere that they were going to pool their commercial rights into a new for-profit venture, which would be funded by the PIF. So the PGA got immediately, you know, it took its time, but got in bed with the same people that they said were evil, bad for golf, not trustworthy, et cetera, et cetera.
You essentially said without, you conveyed in a press card, y'all did 9/11, no.
Correct.
Y'all did 9/11, comma, no, we won't. And then they turned around and immediately did it?
Within a year, yes. I'm going to read you a statement from 9/11 Families United from 2023 after the announcement that the leagues would be exploring a partnership. Mr. Monahan, that's the commissioner of the PGA, talked last summer about knowing people who lost loved ones on 9/11, then wondered aloud on national television whether LIV golfers ever had to apologize for being a member of the PGA Tour. They do now, as does he. PGA Tour leaders should be ashamed of their hypocrisy and greed. Our entire 9/11 community has been betrayed by Commissioner Monahan and the PGA, as it appears their concern for our loved ones was merely window dressing in their quest for money. It was never to honor the great game of golf, end quote.
Ryan, I've learned something today, which is that if the sport of golf was even a skosh more corrupt, I would have spent the last 20 years covering it.
Yeah, I mean, it's not too late.
College football.
You can get on board.
Will always sort of be the bellwether for me, but damn, does this feel like painfully familiar in all the bad ways.
I'm going to raise the ante for you to see if that's more appealing.
Cool.
As recently as February of this year, President Trump has met with Jay Monahan, who remains the commissioner of the PGA Tour, which a lot of golf fans will tell you is mystifying, Liv's chairman, who also happens to be the governor of the PIF, and Tiger Woods.
I'm sorry.
And Tiger Woods to figure out if Liv and the PGA Tour can reunify, if they can work together. Because even though in 2023 they sort of said, we're doing this, we're sort of like figuring out how we can find a path together, there is no formal agreement.
Is this how Tiger met his girlfriend?
I can't. It might be. Let's put a pin in that for another day. Nobody really knows what's going to happen. And depending on who you talk to, like the two guys in the final group of the Masters have both had to talk about this recently. Rory McIlroy has sort of said, I don't think it's going to happen. I don't see Liv coming. I don't see us coming to terms.
Yeah.
Bryson DeChambeau the other way. Like, I think it's going to happen. I think it's going great.
Well, he's a crusher. I mean, you know, you got to honor that tradition.
So
you wouldn't want to let down all the millions of crusher fans.
So maybe that's why the answer to this ultimately, and I expect this is the thing we're going to do a lot on this show, is I don't know. If the PIF comes to an agreement and Liv becomes folded into the PGA in any way, shape, or form, that feels like a victory. That feels like, as its critics would say, Saudi Arabia has more or less bought worldwide golf.
Yes.
Or bought into it at a very high level. But if those negotiations fall apart and Liv remains as this standalone thing that the golf establishment won't embrace, that television audiences aren't flocking to, and that players find less appealing over time, that feels like it fails. That feels like it doesn't achieve any of the goals, whether it's disrupt the game of golf or effectively sports wash for this regime, that feels like a failure. But I think right now the answer is inconclusive, but not trending as positively as it may have seemed at previous times. I should also point out to you, in case this is of interest to you, Liv has held an event in Nashville in the last couple of years. So next time they come through, you let me know, and I'm sure I can get tickets for us on the cheap.
The parallels between this and the pro wrestling industry are terrifying.
Sure.
But I would also point out pro wrestling is where the PIF put its money most prominently at first within the North American realm, back when people were still sort of politely declining this kind of money and its connections. The WWE, which should come as a surprise to zero people, pro wrestling fans mostly, said, we will take them dollars. For sure.
Shocking.
Okay. I think our verdict here is that I'm going to be honest. I'm going to leave this episode very, very confused why the PGA does not just simply wait these idiots out.
That may be the way it's going.
Okay. Because if I'm the PGA.
Yeah.
And there are 10 or so named golfers who are going to be good for a couple years.
Yeah.
Live with this as a nuisance, much the way that the USFL existed for a while as a nuisance. Or the XFL, by the way. And then just simply wait for it to die and gather up whatever crumbs you need. It seems rash. And also, I would say, based off of the politics of the current day, very Saudi influenced, that you would open up a line of negotiation that implies that Liv and PGA are on the same footing.
Sure.
It seems very silly to me if I'm the PGA that I would do anything other than roll my eyes, accept the nuisance, because financially it's not going to wither immediately, right? They will continue to shovel the money into it. But the Masters was considered a success in 2025.
Yeah.
It didn't affect the PGA negatively. It would only enhance the game of golf.
Yeah.
And a LIV golfer was in the final grouping, like you said, right?
Yeah.
So why not just wait these idiots out?
I'm not going to dive into this with you, but I'll give you this as a partial answer. What if I told you there was also a multi-billion dollar investment from a group headed by Steve Cohen, the owner of the New York Mets, into the PGA that strongly wanted the PGA and LIV to come to an agreement together? Oh, if I bring the Mets into this, does that make it better or worse for you?
Oh, okay. So we're at an impasse, both financially, culturally, ethically.
Mm-hmm.
And so, like Gandalf riding in on a horse, Mr. Met shows up and said, "My history alone speaks for itself. Let the Mets fix this."
When you think of sound investment strategies, you think of the New York Mets. I don't want to go out on that.
So the verdict today is that golf is fucked.
It's also a lot of fun. Like, you did miss a really good final Masters round. I get you didn't want to watch it, but it was a lot of fun.
I want to watch the one in Arizona where they all throw up on each other.
Okay. Talk to Spencer about that one. Before you call him, what's your Masters story?
If you're a golf fan and you made it entirely through this, this is the fun little anecdote I have to torture. I've never actually swung a golf club. One of my kids just started golf. You can say you've never swung a golf club if you've played putt-putt, right?
Yeah, no, okay, I don't think you...
I've never held a driver in my hands.
Correct.
Okay, because I grew up that kind of white, mm-hmm. which just means it's just slang Southern poor.
Yeah. I think you can play pop a shot and say, "I've never played basketball."
Correct. Yeah. Okay, great. Yeah, well, I mean, no one in the NBA wins a stuffed animal.
Sure.
I'm just saying.
That's true.
I have a standing... So this is where I always like to drive golfers insane. I have a standing invitation to play Augusta. Because I'm friends with a member. I'm not kidding. We've made a lot of jokes. We've had a lot of fun talking about a horrible subject today. So I always like to tell people that as I can't play, and I actually think it would be really stressful. Would it not? Is it a hard course?
Is Augusta a hard course?
I don't know.
Yes.
I know it's pretty.
Yeah, Godfrey.
I know it's pretty.
Yeah, Godfrey. It's a hard course. I wish you could see the face I'm making right now.
But
am I intrigued by the idea of you playing your first ever round of golf at Augusta National? 100%.
That would be miserable, right?
Oh, but think of the YouTube content.
So my friends were like, "Well, I don't think you can do that at Augusta."
They wouldn't be thrilled.
All I know is that he was like my buddy. He was like, "Hey, our family, blah, blah, blah. I'm not going to get into that part."
Yeah.
This is real, though.
Yeah.
He's like, "Yeah, if you ever learned to golf, you could come play Augusta." And I didn't understand when I received this invitation at the time what that meant. And I casually have mentioned this to people who golf, and they have looked at me with equal parts jealousy and sort of murderous contempt.
Mm-hmm.
And I've had a few people say, "I will train you to golf if you will take me to Augusta.
If I can." Interesting. Yeah. Interesting.
Spoiler alert. I'm not going to do that.
No, I didn't.
I'm going to play PlayStation instead.
That's fine.
So we recorded that episode a few weeks ago, as you can probably tell. A few updates before we close this one out. Number one, Godfrey made a little joke about Faraday brand clothing. It's actually completely unrelated, spelled differently, but it's fine. Don't get mad at him. You can add him if you want, but he's not going to take it very well, and you know that. Also, we have one more piece of data related to the television war between LIV and the PGA. At the end of April, the final round of a LIV event in Mexico aired on Fox Sports 1, went up against a PGA event that couldn't show live golf due to a technical issue for like 2 hours. And the PGA event still averaged 1.6 million viewers, and LIV got 110,000. So, yeah. And hey, thanks for listening to the first episode of Phantom Island. Steven and I are very excited to get this show rolling. Subscribe. If you haven't, give us a review on the podcast app you're listening on. Tell your friends about the show. All of that would be great. We are very, very pumped to dive into more topics. We will hit some college football, but as you can tell by this first episode, it ain't all going to be college football. Big thanks as well to our producer, Michael Serber, for all his work helping us get this off the ground, and we'll see you soon.